Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the August 14, 2016 session, focusing on Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29 through chapter 12, verse 2. How are you running? I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
In this episode, we're looking at another familiar text from the book of Hebrews. We're going to be in Hebrews for a bit. Bert, could you get us started with a bit of insight?
Sure, I'll try. Now, very early on in church history, people attributed the Apostle Paul to have written Hebrews, because basically, you know, why not? He wrote just about everything else. But pretty much we all know now, Paul the Apostle did not write our Hebrew verses from Hebrews today. But Paul the Beatle, most certainly, without any doubt, wrote these related verses. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. In my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And I said these are related verses because I am convinced that the writer of Hebrews is saying something to this effect in our text this week. The Christians in the latter half of the first century AD, to whom the book of Hebrews is addressed, were facing severe persecution. Some were growing weary and disillusioned in their faith because Jesus was pretty slow in returning. Others were beginning to make ethical compromises with the world around them, compromising their faith in order to get along a little bit better. And so the writer of Hebrews tells the stories of faith again. Stories of the great heroes, of God's miraculous interventions in history time and time and time again. The Red Sea parting, the walls of Jericho falling, Rahab the prostitute, Samson, David. All of these great stories of heroes and heroines being faithful and doing great things. But then the writer also reminds the listeners, the readers, that it's not all miraculous success stories. There are tales that do not end well with worldly glory. Ancestors of the faith who were imprisoned, stoned, sawn in two. Stories of great heroes and heroines suffering and dying for their faith without seeing any earthly glory whatsoever. And the writer gives this image to those early Christians. And he says it's like you're running a race around a track. And all of these ancestors are there in the stands cheering for you, pulling for you. And the purpose then for those first century hearers of Hebrews was to be strengthened, to be renewed, to be encouraged, for them to keep their eyes solely on Jesus, and if I may paraphrase a line from the great Tom Hanks movie, just run, Christian, run. Don't give up. Don't drop out of the race. Don't compromise your faith to get a cheaper temporary victory. When we find ourselves in times of trouble, in our hours of darkness, we might very well discover great heroes of faith, be they Esther or Ruth or Abraham, Luke, Lydia, or Barnabas, be they your Aunt Eula, Uncle JT, Grandpa Harold, your childhood Sunday school teacher, or even the Mother Mary, or your Mother Mary, or your mother by any other name. You may just find them in some mysterious, mystical, whispering, ethereal presence standing right in front of you, speaking words of hope, words of affirmation, speaking words of wisdom, for we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Amen, and so let it be.
Bert, I love your introduction so much. So much. That was so good. Like, I mean, to those who are listening, like, we were cracking up before we got started, and we are all waiting for Bert's, whatever his musical connection is to the text. And then he turns it into this incredibly meaningful moment, and he's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly what's going on in the text.
You know, on the last podcast, we were talking about, I think we mentioned that Tennyson quote, "I'm a part of all that I have met." And so if we can connect these two podcasts and apply that to this great cloud of witnesses, I guess that means we're a part of that great cloud too. I don't like to think of myself that way, but is that an odd way for you to think about yourself and your contribution to the faith community, that you're part of somebody else's great cloud of witnesses?
That's pretty, that way. Pretty scary to think about, but pretty,
yeah.
I mean, pretty affirming too, to think about.
I mean, theologically, I can affirm that. Personally, I'm not there. And I think part of that is because of my cloud of witnesses that I look to. I mean, I talked about them last week, but that, I mean, no, like I don't think of myself that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Me neither. That's what I'm getting at. That I think you put it well, theologically, yes, I can check that box.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But practically, don't put me in that category.
No.
Yeah. It's like calling yourself a saint. I don't. Yeah.
Well, the three of you would be in my cloud of witnesses.
Oh.
I mean that. Like, I'm not trying to be cheesy. Like, that's really true. It's really true. Okay, so thinking about how, like, this cloud of witnesses, you know, are we a part of it? Are we, you know, how does that work? I really am intrigued by the metaphor the author uses about running this race. That, and for me, so often when we think about running a race, it's about getting to that finish line. It's about completing and finishing the race. But I think that when I look at this passage, in particular, the people who are listed in today's passage, they're not honored because they finished a race. They're honored because of how they ran it. And it is how they performed during the race. I was watching some Olympic trials with a friend of mine the other day, and there was this one person who was falling behind, and he kind of jokingly remarked they should just give it up. Like, it was bad. They were falling way, way behind. I said, no, you have to finish the race. And it's not because you have to finish the race. It's that, like, you don't give up. Like, you keep going and you keep running, even if you've fallen behind. And I think that these people, one of the reasons their stories are so impactful is they kept running the race. They kept pushing. They kept living their lives the way God called us to live our lives.
You know, the sports metaphor works to a degree, right? But a lot of times the sports events are pretty limited in time, right? They're an hour, a couple hours. But there's a sporting event that's going on right now and that I watch as much as I can, and it's the Tour de France, which is an amazing event because it is – I mean, it almost fills up July. What is it, 23 days? Mm-hmm. And, you know, these riders, they do get rest days here and there. But, I mean, wow, the mountains they have to climb, the distances they go, you know, they don't stop for the weather. I mean, the other day, it was literally hailing. I mean, there were hailstones that were bigger than marbles that were falling as they were getting up toward the finish on this particular mountain climb. And it was unbelievable. And I was just thinking – I mean, how in the world do you train for that? You know, I mean, they don't know what's going to happen when they get on the bike that day and head off, what kind of crosswinds they're going to have, or if there's going to thunderstorms going to come up on the hill. But I mean, maybe that is an even better image in terms of, you know, the challenges of that longer road of faith that we're describing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sometimes you have hail, you know, whether it's a bike race or, you know, running a road race, sometimes there are hurdles.
Yeah.
You don't just stop. You have to – I don't know if this is pertinent, but I happened to catch a little video clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson was speaking before a crowd, and a little girl who looked to be maybe 7 or 8 years old said, "Dr. Tyson, do you know any dyslexic scientists?" Or something to that effect. Evidently, she suffers from that and wants to be a scientist. And he talked about he works with a scientist with a lot of different issues and things going on in their life. And he ends with this something to the effect of, so dyslexia is a hurdle, but what do we do when we come to hurdles? we jump over them. Mm. And it was a beautiful moment. He could have just said, yeah, I work with all kinds of people and blown her off. But he connected with her. And I don't know, when you were talking, Nikki, and you, David, about it's not about finishing who comes in first, but how you do it. And whether you choose to jump over those hurdles when they come or not. I'll have to find that clip and put that in the show notes.
So what else do we want to talk about in terms of, I mean, running is a rich image.
Well, I'd like to see us move. I mean, keep that, the encouragement from the outside while we're running or whatever we're doing. And if I may use a literature reference, my Harry Potter friends will be upset that I'm not going to make the obvious reference to Harry Potter when he's in the cemetery facing Voldemort for the first time with a body and their wands connect and all of these people mm-hmm. that Voldemort has killed surround them all, but protect him. And they're giving him instruction and courage as to what to do next. It's a powerful image, mm-hmm. but that's too obvious. So all my Harry Potter friends, but if you don't, look it up, read it. But there's another one, predates English literature, predates Harry Potter somewhat, in T.H. White's The Sword in the Stone. The young character named Wart finally confronts his destiny when he's told to take hold of a sword that is embedded in a stone. And all the mighty leaders of England have tried to draw the sword, and none of them were able to do so. And, of course, the mythology is that only the true king could do so. And Wart knows nothing of any of this. He just needs the sword to take to his foster brother. So he takes hold of the stone. Takes hold of the sword, and he's pulling from the stone, and he's pulling with all of his might, and nothing's happening, of course. But as he's straining, he becomes aware, literally, that this cloud of witnesses have gathered around him. And they're all his teachers. They're all his friends. It's his tutor, Merlin, that has introduced him to all these things over the years. And he hears a great fish telling him, put your back into it. And a beautiful goose telling him to pull with great muscles in his chest as if he were flying, and so on and so on. And with their encouragement, he finds the strength and resolve to do what needs to be done. And he pulls the sword from the stone, and everything is different. And you know the rest of the story. Young Wart becomes the great King Arthur of Camelot. And I think if we just focus on running the race, and I think we tend to do that when we preach this, and that's an important part of this text, but there's this also very important thing of somehow, whether they're memories, voices from the past, real life, mystical dreams, whatever, of all of these voices from our past, somehow at certain moments, giving us what we need to keep going.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's a great story and reference, Bert. The children's minister at our church, when she talks about what she tries to do and with all that team that works with her to teach our children, she will describe it as helping, in part, that the work is helping children to develop a repository of stories and memories and experiences that happen as they grow up in the church. So it's not just what happens, you know, in the classroom, but it's all these experiences that they have that hopefully then when they are, when they're at college, when they're young adults, as they grow older, that they're able to access those experiences and memories and people in a meaningful way that helps keep them anchored and centered in that journey of faith.
I work at a seminary, and I work in helping, I work in the admissions department, and we have a question on our application that says, you know, tell us about your Christian pilgrimage. And inevitably, people will talk about the beginning of their Christian pilgrimage as beginning when they accepted Christ. And I have a faculty member who shall not be named, who gets so frustrated every time someone starts their essay that way. And it's not even that people's pilgrimage begins when they're born, but that their that our pilgrimages began before us, that we, and part of it is that we are connected to this long group of people who have walked before us. And if indeed we are a part of this cloud of witnesses, we are joining this long Christian pilgrimage that has been going for over 2,000 years now. Mm-hmm. And so in reality, our pilgrimage began before us. It at least began at our birth, if not before. And I find that to be wonderfully comforting, that there is this thing I am a part of that is so much bigger than me, that I get to participate in, that I occasionally get to contribute to, and that carries me when I need it in really wonderful ways. And that's incredibly encouraging.
When you were describing that, Nikki, I couldn't help but remember, I've had the privilege and pleasure of being able to travel some in the last few years internationally. And on one trip, we traveled to Italy, and we had an art professor with us in the group, and we had a religion professor. And we went to cathedrals all over Italy. And you know, part of it is just the experience of the architecture, but part of it is when you realize that, you know, as you were describing, the history that's there and the generations of people that built those places of worship, but also who worship there and live there and, you know, baptize there and raise children there. And, you know, those places are incredible reminders, you know, and I here we don't have buildings that are anywhere near that old, mm-hmm. but over there, you know, to realize that there are thousands of years of people that worked and mm-hmm. worshiped and built. And
that makes me think of special days on the Christian calendar. So particularly like World Communion Sunday. When I think about when I think about the Christian calendar and following that with so many other people of faith around the world, or when I think about on World Communion Sunday, that when I take communion on that Sunday, I am taking it along with Christians all over the world who embody this this gospel in their own unique ways and cultures. There is a sense of, I mean, a cloud of witnesses is a great image. It is a beautiful image. The idea that we all are different, not to be too like sciencey nerdy, but we're all different particles within this cloud, but together we make up this kind of great cloud, this all together, combined together. I think there's something really lovely about the connectivity of us across time and space.
David, you talked about traveling internationally, but you know, particularly in being able to worship in another culture, that I think, Nikki, you were talking a few minutes ago about how gratifying it is to realize that, you know, that our pilgrimage started, you know, before us and will continue after us.
Mm-hmm.
That particularly becomes gratifying to me and pertinent for me when I go visit some of these churches or worship in a completely different culture, different language. It often offers so much perspective, and inevitably I receive this incredible feeling of kinship with brothers and sisters with whom I don't share a common language or culture. Frankly, sometimes we would look at one another and say we're very different, but there's an immediate kinship there. And there's a realization that my brother or sister, whom I'm sitting next to, singing in a different language, praying in a different language, plays an incredible role in the reign of God and in God's plan. And it's a great reminder on those days when my ego tells me it's all up to me. You know, I play this huge role in ushering in Christ's kingdom here on earth, that no, this is not me. This is all of us. Hmm. It was here before me. It'll be here after me. Paradoxically, perhaps that is a very comforting thought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to share with you one of my own personal experiences with this, and it really brings in the whole mystical, mysterious thing we've been talking about, this connectedness that y'all have been talking about. And it was just over 10 years ago. I was writing a seminary research paper on the Reverend Will D. Campbell. And you may need to Google that. We'll provide a link. If you don't know who Will Campbell is, you need to know Will Campbell. But one of my sources for my paper was a PhD dissertation in a library at a seminary. And the dissertation was both sociological and theological, and it captured the spirit of Will Campbell and his deep distrust of all institutions, all organizations, especially the organized institutional church, which is why I love Will Campbell. And I soon began to realize that the author of this dissertation, I began to feel as though this author were an old trusted friend. We had never met, didn't know anything about him. But he was expressing what I was feeling and thinking far better than I could myself. And during this time, I was also slowly coming to terms with God's call to be a pastor. And I kept telling God, I'm not ready. I can't do this yet. In fact, I have no desire to be the head of an institutional church, which is why I was reading Will Campbell. And during that time, a pastor in Henry County, Kentucky, who was associated with the seminary, asked to give my resume to the pastor search committee at a small Baptist church, Campbellsburg Baptist Church, there in Henry County. And I thought, I scratched my head and I thought, Campbellsburg Baptist Church, that kind of sounds familiar. And a few days later, I was back at the library, the seminary library, and I had the dissertation back out on the desk, reading more of it, making notes, the dissertation of my favorite Baptist rabble-rousing church dropout preacher, Will Campbell. And then I turned to the back of the dissertation to read the brief biography of the author, and there it was, Robin Jimerson, pastor of Campbellsburg Baptist Church. Mm. Now, Robin had died of cancer at a very young age while pastoring that church just after completing this dissertation and getting his PhD. Now, I cannot explain what happened. I can't describe it. I didn't see Robin Jimerson in a dream or a vision, and I wouldn't have known what he looked like anyway. And I didn't hear any audible voice speaking to me, but I can tell you at that moment, at that very moment, it was as if all time had come to a complete stop, and there was a presence there encouraging me, assuring me, and the message I got was, you can do this, Bert. Talk to that search committee. Don't be afraid. Keep trusting where God is leading to you. And by the end of that year, I was pastor of Campbellsburg Baptist Church, and that always reminds me or comes to mind when I think of, we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses.
Mm. Mm. Well, thank you for that story, Bert. That reminder that we do not walk this journey alone. I thank each of you for walking that journey together with us and with our listeners. It's a great reminder that we are part of something so much bigger than each of us. Each of you have a good night.
Thanks.
You too.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.